Hello, and welcome to AWIN Talks, the affiliate marketing podcast. I'm Rob Davidson, content analyst in AWIN's global strategy team, and I'm joined by my regular co-host, Kevin Edwards, our global strategy director. Hi, Kev.
Hello, how you doing?
Yeah, good, thanks. How are you?
I am okay, thank you.
Good, good. Not struggling too much in the heat wave that seems to have broken more recently with some fairly heavy downpours.
Just in time for your holiday.
Perfect. On episode 24 of the podcast, we have another couple of great industry interviews for you to enjoy. In our regular Meet the Market feature, we head to Germany to speak to Daniel Kocher, Senior Affiliate Manager at the German performance marketing agency Expose 360. And we find out from him about some of the characteristics that distinguish digital and affiliate marketing in that particular region. Before that, though, Kev, you spoke to Rupa Shah, an independent consultant who advises influencers, social media and digital agencies and brands on how to best navigate the regulatory issues around advertising compliance in today's environment. Now, your conversation honed in specifically on the increased scrutiny that the affiliate industry is faced from regulators around the world regarding advertising disclosure. And I wanted to preface that interview, which listeners will be able to hear shortly, with something of an exclusive podcast announcement from AWIN about the impending launch of a new product that is aimed at helping our affiliates ensure they're promoting brands compliantly and transparently to their audiences. Now, the product is called AdMission. And Kev, you've been leading the development of this as a project since the start of the year. So what can you tell us about it?
Yeah, so AdMission is kind of new product launch, as you say. It's a kind of network agnostic solution. So we wanted to bring something to the industry that could be used by anybody, regardless of whether they just used AWIN or competitor links or a combination of all of those links. What it essentially does in a nutshell is it gives publishers the ability to roll out an automated disclosure tool. So we don't kind of offer any guarantees that it achieves compliance. However, having looked at the different regulations that exist in different markets, we feel that it's a really good attempt to offer affiliates, typically long tail bloggers, affiliates who maybe feel slightly confused by the topic, the ability to plug in to their existing affiliate links, link disclosure. So you can switch on a page level disclosure if you feel that that's all that's required. And that message may be, you know, I earn money from commercial relationships that I have with certain brands. And therefore, if you click through and purchase, I may earn a commission, which helps obviously fund the site. Or you can also switch on individual notifiers for links as well. So not only can you carry that message, when you're then featuring links maybe in content that you've produced, you can then also put a notifier against each of those links. And it's flexible, so you can put whatever notifier you want. Maybe it might be hashtag ad, it might be an asterisk, and in which case you use the page level notifier to say, well, actually the asterisk refers to any link that is a commercial link. And we just felt that given the pressure coming from regulators and given that actually affiliates in many different markets are required to do this at the moment and very few are, that we really needed to do that through some sort of automated solution, some plug and play solution. And so this is kind of our attempt to do that.
And so for affiliates that want to use the tool when it becomes available, which is very soon, but is it going to cost them anything?
No, the only thing that they will need to have enabled is our publisher master tag. So our publisher master tag was launched earlier this year, and we set ourselves a sort of fairly ambitious target. We have around 3,000 affiliates that now have it implemented, and that figure is sort of rising at a pretty steep rate on a daily basis. So you will need to have that enabled. And when it's enabled, you then have the ability to log into the publisher master tag overview page where you can see the different sort of bits of tech that you can switch on or off. And within that, you'll see the AdMission tool with a very brief description of what it does. you switch it on and then you get a very simple form which basically says, I want a page level notifier, I want an individual link notifier, and then it gives you a free text field to be able to say what you want that notifier or text to actually say, and also where you want it to appear. So it's customizable, it's flexible, and we will be sort of pushing out additional information about it over the sort of coming weeks and months. And we felt it was a really good opportunity to reach out to someone like Rupa, who is kind of an expert in this field, and just sort of find out kind of what the current state of play is around sort of disclosure specifically for affiliates and influencers.
So when do you think it is that admission will be available for affiliates to be able to adopt within the Publisher Master Tag?
So we're doing it as a staged release. So August is typically a quiet month. So we felt that we could maybe roll it out with a couple of test markets. So the UK and the US will be first. And hopefully at the time of listening, it should already be available. And then we will be rolling it out to some additional markets from September onwards.
Perfect. So looking forward to seeing that released. Well, without further ado, we'll hand over to your interview with Rupa.
So I'm joined today by Rupa Shah. Rupa has more than a decade's worth of experience working for advertising regulators in the UK. In the various roles she's had, she's responsible for both investigating advertising complaints and breaches, as well as advising on how to ensure standards are fit for a digital age. For the past 3 years, she's run her own business, hashtag ad consulting, advising influencers, agencies and brands on how to ensure their advertising is compliant. She also advises the Committee for Advertising Practice, or CAP code as people generally know it, on their current guidance. So Rupa, thanks very much for joining us today.
Thanks, Kevin.
I think it would be useful as a starting point if you could maybe just give our listeners a little bit of a potted history of your work, maybe regulator side, and then kind of more recently in your role as setting up your own consultancy.
Sure. So I got into the regulatory business around about 15 years ago now. So I spent 13 years in total at the ASA and CAP. And I began my journey in their investigations team. So that's the ASA. And of course, as you know, being 15 years ago, there wasn't so much online work going on. So some of the investigations I was doing were, you know, into magazine ads, print ads, that type of thing. And then sort of my journey progressed over to CAP, who is the ASA sister body. So in reality, it's one office, but obviously we all know them as two separate bodies. So while I was there, I provided copy advice and ultimately ended up in their compliance team. So taking action against rogue advertisers, those advertisers that were absolutely not complying with the ASA rulings, or who were just, you know, generally avoiding the ASA. So, yeah, I mean, it was 13 years, a 13-year journey through the ASA, but it did mean I got to grips with all types of advertising. And by the end of it, by the time I was in compliance, quite a lot of the work that I was doing was in influencer marketing. So that was the start of the journey to creating hashtag ads. It was because I was getting a ton of inquiries, going to conferences and being asked lots and lots of questions about how the ASA rules should be applied to various scenarios on social media. And actually, at the very start, not having the answer to those questions and realising that the ASA needed to be doing quite a lot of catch up. So, yeah, the opportunity arose and I realised that actually there were quite a few agencies and brands in particular who could benefit from some real sort of agile, quick advice rather than waiting for another ASA ruling to be transferred into, a you know, the CAP code or CAP advice. So I created hashtag ad about 3 years ago, my own consultancy, and started working directly with brands and agencies to provide them with advice on the rules for influencer marketing. And that's evolved into providing advice on global campaigns. I can give advice on the FTC rules. You know, it doesn't matter because obviously campaigns are across the globe and, you know, I have to be able to provide advice on pretty much everything at the moment.
Great. Yeah, I mean, well, just picking up on a couple of the points you mentioned there, obviously, 15 years ago when you sort of started on this sort of journey, it was probably the focus probably was on kind of traditional, what we call traditional media. But one of the challenges I think any regulator probably has is just how rapidly evolving digital and online is. How much of a kind of challenge is that to regulators and to brands now about sort of how to ensure, because brands want to make sure that they're compliant, and obviously there are reputational issues if they're not. So how much of a kind of challenge is that for brands and regulators?
And for regulators, it's always going to be a challenge. It's the eternal challenge, isn't it? That they need to be able to react, but also not be seen as only reactive. So they also don't want to be setting policy for, you know, areas where actually that's not really what the focus is for marketers. They're not really doing that. The ASA needs to be able to focus on those problems that really affect consumers, and that's really what they're there for. But equally, the sister body CAP needs to be providing guidance. So it's a challenge for them. They need an ASA, CAP needs an ASA ruling, really, in order for it to provide guidance. And to have that ASA ruling, they really need a complaint. And if you haven't got anyone complaining about an area, you're in this kind of area where there's not a lot happening. And then suddenly you'll get that clamour for, well, you know, we're freewheeling as a brand. We don't know what we're doing. And that's particularly, you see that more when innovation, technology, everything's moving faster. So the ASA, when I started, they weren't even looking at websites. They were, you know, we were purely looking at traditional media. And then, you know, almost overnight, suddenly the ASA were having to look at websites and trying to create policy for, well, actually, what part of a website, for example, is advertising? Is the whole website, you know, what do we class as advertising? And I think as regulators, the ASA are doing pretty well in making sure they are there at the forefront, at least, of what's going on. Compared to some of the potentially the regulatory bodies across Europe, the ASA are very well funded. They're large. It's a good organisation. There's, you know, plenty of staff there to manage. But when you think about how vast now the online ad world is, there are always going to be some gaps and challenges for the regulators.
It's an interesting one for me, because I've been involved in sort of self-regulation from an affiliate perspective for a number of years now. And I've always seen regulators as being a useful ally, in that my perception is, dealing with, having spoken to the ASA a few years back and other regulators as well, is that actually they want information. They want to be able to make kind of like a balanced, rational set of advice that isn't necessarily kind of onerous or punishing. And I think that some people kind of, that their perception of regulation is that it's kind of there to sort of squash innovation or kind of drive, you know, or sort of punish businesses, and for me it's never really been like that. And it's sort of, I guess the online challenge is that, because it is still quite an immature industry, that, you know, it's premised on kind of entrepreneurs and all this kind of, you know, high growth area, that is a kind of an inherent challenge. But actually regulators, I've found, have actually been quite receptive to sort of being approached.
Yeah, I think, I mean, we've got the advantage of here in the UK of having a self-regulatory system, which means that it is the advertisers themselves who are regulating themselves. So the Committee of Advertising Practice, CAP, is made up of, you know, a board of various advertising trade bodies, which means that they are feeding into the, they understand what all of these advertisers require and need. And as a system, it works because, yes, the ASA responds to consumer complaints and industry complaints, but actually, like I said, it's the advertisers themselves who are setting those rules. So it's not as remote as, you know, somebody who doesn't, you know, a legislator who doesn't understand necessarily how the system works. CAP do understand what's going on in the advertising world. And to add to that, they also conduct research and monitoring to find out exactly what's happening in the industry and what the key concerns are. So that monitoring is not just of the consumers and consumer perspective, but it's also to understand what's going on in the industry. So as I said, I think it's a good system, and it's definitely not a system that you'd want to swap for a sort of a legislative based system where things would be slower, and, you know, if there were complaints, the penalties would be different, of course, but actually we can get a resolution to a complaint very, very quickly with this system. It often gets called toothless, and, you know, there are various criticisms levelled at the regulators. But actually, you know, the self-regulatory system suits advertisers and it suits the public, because they get a result very quickly.
I mean, you mentioned there some of the research that's undertaken by regulators. One piece of research that sort of springs to mind for me, which has been really invaluable, I think, for the affiliate industry, was kind of an awareness of different terms and language that is used around disclosure. So I think that there was a survey done, I can't remember whether it was this year or last year, where they surveyed consumers and about awareness of different notifiers, so like hashtag ad or sponsored or affiliate or AF or kind of different language and terms. And that was quite interesting. I'd encourage people listening to kind of do a little bit of research into that themselves, because it was quite illuminating. Just sort of focusing in on some of those kind of practical elements sort of that exist within our industry at the moment. Kind of where are we at the moment in terms of what obligation influencers and affiliates have to disclose their content, their commercial content?
Well, the code's always been really clear on this point, even before, you know, influencers ever existed. It was that ads should always look like ads, and they should an advertiser should never present themselves as a consumer. So that's been enshrined in the codes for a very long time, and it applies very directly to influencer marketing. So and particularly so for influencers who will have organic content sometimes sitting alongside commercial content. So it's really important, the ASA feels, that consumers should be able to tell the difference. So I think the ASA have, you know, over the last 5 years, they've updated advice, they've updated guidance and produced really clear guidelines and sort of route maps and flowcharts to explain exactly what influencers need to be doing. And with this research as well, which you've mentioned, they've gone a little bit further to actually explain exactly what labels are appropriate for identifying these ads. It's illuminating, as you said, because one of the key ones and one of the most controversial ones was the word affiliate, and the fact the ASA considered that, you know, most consumers don't actually understand what affiliate means, and so discourage now, and you'll see this in some of their most recent rulings, are actively discouraging the use of that word, and would prefer marketers to be using the word ad.
Yeah, I mean, I've worked in the affiliate industry for a long time, and my parents still don't understand what affiliate is. So,
so you've got some sympathy.
Yeah, definitely. I think influencers is obviously a really interesting one, because it's grown so rapidly and become such a go-to for many brands. Certainly, because I think certain types of brands. So, like fast fashion is a really good example. They have a very clear demographic, which is very young, and they know that the way to get in front of their target audience is through social media and those social channels. I guess that probably what we see is that there's a little bit of an arms race when a kind of new kind of whoever's flavor of the month sort of comes in, and all of these brands sort of want to pile in and you want to sign them up and get them on board to promote their products. Kind of what have you must have seen some of the challenges that throws up, in that there's obviously a desire by brands to sort of hit the ground running, because that's very much the nature of their businesses, versus sure. The sort of breaks that maybe the sort of the compliance angle throws up.
Yeah, I think that's it. I think that is the challenge. It's the speed. It's the trying to actually do everything in a very short space of time. And I think the problem you'll always have with anything to do with legal or regulatory is that we like to put the brakes on things. We like to slow things down and make sure that you've got everything correct. So yeah, I think what I'm pleased to be seeing actually, and which is helpful, what is helpful in the fast fashion industry, is there is a move away from those five posts, you know, in the next month, do it quick. And we're moving more towards the collaborative. You've got a year. This is what we're looking for over the course of a year, because that helps in terms of the contract. There's more likely to be a clear contract. There's more likely to be guidance provided by the brands, although not always. And it gives the influencer a chance to really think about the business side of things and to actually feel like they are a commercial enterprise. Whereas with these quick in and out, this is what you need to do. We might gift you a couple of things. We're not paying you, so actually don't worry about putting a, you know, hashtag ad on anything. That's slightly moving away, although of course at certain tiers within the influencer industry that's still happening, and it will always still happen. But when we're looking at the larger macro influencers, the fact that there is a more collaborative approach is great for the regulatory side of things, I think, because it just gives you that extra time to really nurture a relationship and to take on board all of the compliance and regulatory and legal considerations that exist.
The influencer one, the influencer area of business is an interesting one for us, because it's something that has never really kind of sat completely within affiliate, although I think that, as you say, as the industry's matured, I also think brands are becoming more demanding about what they get for their money. So performance is sort of being thrown in as kind of a condition in some of those relationships, in which case it kind of maybe does sit a little bit more comfortably with affiliate, and we have seen some budgets flow into affiliate. But how do you, as I say, it's still a very new industry. Do you see, when you speak to kind of that, influencer networks now are sort of, there's quite a number of them, and all these influencers, thousands of them are signed up. Do you see that there's sort of a concerted effort within that industry to sort of recognize that actually they kind of do need to get their house a little bit in order?
I do. So I do some work now with influencers directly and also indirectly. So I am seeing a bit more of a dialogue amongst influencers now in terms of, you know, there are discussions on their own forums, in groups, Facebook groups, of actively trying to comply. So, and actually I find this more amongst the sort of the nano influencers and the micro influencers who are keen to comply. Partly because we are also seeing ASA level a few more influencer led complaints. So influencers are complaining about each other, unfortunately. But I mean, it does mean that there are some good, and I like these, good rulings which help us advise the rest of the influencer industry. So it is important that complaints do come in. What the ASA doesn't obviously like are too many tit for tat complaints. But yes, I am seeing influencers taking more responsibility. And I think this is, as the industry matures, influencers are starting to see themselves as businesses. And this is the main thing, that it's not always just, you know, a side hustle. And actually, I don't need to think about things like tax, insurance, rules. They realise they do. It all comes into it. So yes, it's maturing. The influencers themselves are seeking out information. The regulators are making it easier for them to access that information, certainly in the UK. And then you've got, obviously, you know, these other industries, people like me, who are able to provide it in a different level, straight to the advertisers, straight to brands, agencies. So I think influencers are certainly becoming more educated on the topic. There will always be those that at certain levels think that my manager can sort that out, or, you know, I don't really need to think about it. And unfortunately, that can be quite dangerous in a way, because, you know, when you do have a large team and you're relying on your team to deal with all of the regulatory side of things, ultimately, it's your reputation that's at risk. It's not the manager's. So if you're getting it wrong, you're not following the rules, you are likely to damage yourself. You're the one that's going to suffer the most. So I think influencers are realising that ASA rulings can affect them, and they're designed to affect them. Having worked in the compliance team, I know exactly what, you know, what they do to make sure that they are targeting those influencers quite hard. And that it's not just the brand who will pay the penalty. Influencers themselves do too.
Yeah, I mean, exactly that, isn't it? Because it's like a symbiotic thing. I think both influencer and brand have the responsibility to ensure that stuff is done properly. And ultimately, if brands get nervous around compliance issues, then they'll just pull stuff, which actually we've seen. Thankfully, it's been very rare, but we actually have one instance at the moment where we work with one large brand who I won't name, but they had an ASA complaint around a year ago. And as a result, they pulled all of their affiliate campaign apart from cashback sites, who they know are exempt from kind of any sort of disclosure because they're very obviously a commercial enterprise. So actually, it's in all of our interests to want to do the right thing by this, because if brands have the confidence around control and trust, then naturally they'll be more confident about spending money in the channel. So it's just sort of having the maturity of mind to be actually, yes, we know that it's sort of maybe the less fun end of the relationship, but it's still a really important element of it.
I agree. Yeah, I think that's it. It, like you said, it's a joint responsibility. So brands, obviously, they're going to see a hit. I mean, we talked briefly about, you know, the ASA seeming toothless, but the hit is very much primarily reputation, but that's also going to translate into sales ultimately. In the past, I used to do presentations for CAP and the ASA, and one of our slides showed a telecoms operator whose share price dropped significantly after an ASA ruling. So, things have moved on. That was about 15 years ago. But now, you know, the ASA can hit you through social media. If that's your primary source of income, well, that's what they're going to go for. So, you know, they have these techniques in their compliance team of being able to ensure ensure that a brand is no longer profiting from a, you know, misleading route. And it works, you know, we see it works. There are very few advertisers that end up on the naughty list, which is what we used to call it, a separate section of the website which lists non-compliant advertisers. It's not very big, and considering how many ASA rulings they, you know, conduct and how many complaints come in, brands are complying. They don't want to. There were a few that will game the system a little bit in the past. There were some, you know, entrepreneurs, I'll say, who thought actually an ASA ruling would be a great thing to have, and, you know, we'll get some extra publicity from it. It doesn't happen so much now because, you know, I think consumers, you know, are very much aware of what their rights are, quite happy to complain. The ASA has been running throughout lockdown. You know, there's no pause on what the rules are, what the regulations are. It's all still ongoing, and we are seeing rulings. They come out every Wednesday. So I think brands, as well as influencers, are aware of their responsibilities. But the challenge is with affiliate marketing and influencer marketing, all the nuances, and understanding exactly how it applies to the marketing that you are doing.
Yeah, absolutely. So just a couple of more questions before I let you go. I know we've covered a lot of stuff today, but are there kind of any, as your role as a consultant, when you're speaking to lots of different businesses from different walks of life, are there kind of any additional themes or challenges that are coming up that you kind of think are sort of useful to sort of discuss today?
What's coming up? I think, you know, we talked about that piece of research which talked about labelling, and I think this is always going to be a tricky area. What are the correct labels to use, particularly when you're talking about, you know, labels in various languages? What's acceptable in America isn't necessarily what's acceptable over in the UK. So I think we're always going to have some issues regarding the perfect label for influencer and affiliate marketing. In terms of the industry, what I'm seeing a few more examples of are virtual influencers, and I think this will be a key topic that we should keep an eye on, because I think this raises various other considerations, ethical considerations, you know, transparency considerations, and being able to tell actually who is behind a virtual influencer, for example, what brand it is. So the ASA haven't investigated anything along those lines yet, but I could imagine it won't be very long till they do. So I think those are probably the things that I'm kind of keeping an eye on at the moment.
I find that stuff terrifying.
And they're so good, they're so realistic that I think I mean, I've been dealing with a company that's, you know, we're potentially coming together to create a code of ethics for this industry. So that's something I'm working on, because I think it is, as you say, it could be terrifying, and it's so advanced, it's more advanced than you think, I think, because we don't always have access to what's going on behind the scenes. But yeah, a burgeoning industry there, that one to keep an eye on.
I mean, the last question I was going to ask you was actually if you could look into your crystal ball, what do you see coming around the corner? But that seems to answer that one, really.
Yeah, very much so. I think that is it. But I think we'll also see a bit more harmony. I think we're seeing a few more trade bodies around the globe on the influencer and affiliate marketing sides. So I think what we're seeing is a bit more coordination, trade bodies, trade groups, to try and harmonise the rules, because it's tricky. And I know all brands are struggling with rules that are cross-border. So I think that's also what we'll see. We'll see some more initiatives and bodies emerging, which are trying to provide a sort of guidance and a more of a level playing field across borders.
Yeah, and we work with brands that are looking to expand overseas, and so that kind of any sort of removal of those pain points will undoubtedly be quite welcome for them. Rupa, thanks very much today. It's been really, really interesting. If people want to find out a little bit more about you, or kind of want to speak to you about any of the services you offer, what's the best way of them getting in touch?
So I'm quite active on LinkedIn. I post videos and sort of blogs and features on there. So LinkedIn is a great place to find me, as I'm there quite a lot. So it's Rupa Shah, a hashtag ad on LinkedIn. Alternatively, my website, hashtagad.com, or to email me, rupa@hashtagad.co.uk.
Brilliant. Thanks, Rupa.
No problem at all. It's good talking to you, Kevin.
So I'm delighted to say I'm now joined by Daniel Cocker, Senior Affiliate Manager from the German performance marketing agency Expose 360. Hi, Daniel. Thanks for joining us.
Hi. Thank you very much for inviting me to the podcast.
No, it's great to have you on, and I'm hoping we can find a little bit about the German market from you today. So I wanted to kick things off just by asking you what you think it is that distinguishes the German digital advertising industry from other regions around the world.
So I would start in terms of consumer behavior. So I would say Germans are very special. So the lowest price, no matter which efforts it brings with it, is a very important detail in terms of online shopping. So for Germany, especially deal and cashback sites are very important. Yeah, but in general, also Germany is having a very strict and partly complicated law system in terms of cookies, necessary website information like an imprint, and also consumer communication for advertisers. So you have a lot of laws which are restricting how you can communicate, or how it is allowed to communicate to potential customers. Yeah, and so as far as I know, there is nearly no other country in Europe having such strict requirements. So yeah, I think those are very important highlighted things for the German markets here.
Yeah, sure. And I mean, when we're looking specifically at the affiliate channel in Germany, how do you think that that's currently perceived by German advertisers and brands?
So in the last 10 years, there has been a complete mind change in the advertisers landscape. This is my opinion. So I've been working in affiliate for 10 years now. And in the past, affiliate marketing was seen as a kind of untransparent and, let's say, it only voucher-driven channel. So a lot of advertisers have the opinion that affiliate is just based on vouchers, and that their own margins are getting decreased by those. But this changed within the last years. So this is what I saw. Affiliate marketing is more than just vouchers, cashback, or price comparison in the meanwhile. It is, or could be, behind nearly every online marketing campaign. So started from, for example, social media and influencer campaigns, or going forward with tech campaigns like retargeting, predictive targeting, website overlays. And last but not least, also branding communication. So especially due to the fact that social media and influencer campaigns are that important in the meanwhile, also branding campaigns are getting done by affiliate networks, agencies, programs, whatever. So I would say without affiliate marketing in Germany, your online marketing strategy or e-commerce strategy is going to fail if you're not doing it in Germany.
I mean, do you think one of my next questions was going to be related to coronavirus, obviously, and the impact that that's had upon consumer shopping habits in Germany. But before asking that, actually, I wondered whether or not you think that the increased popularity and adoption maybe of different types of affiliate marketing in the channel has been improved or increased because of the impact of the pandemic upon advertising budgets for brands, etc.
So I just read and heard some numbers about the impact of the COVID-19 virus on the online shopping behavior of the users. So as far as I remember, it's around 50% of the users ordered more products online than before the crisis. So nearly every second user. And also around, I think it was 40% are receiving more packages at home. So there is definitely an increase, a huge increase in terms of orders. And yeah, around every 10th users ordered also the first time online. So like the virus or the pandemic also had an effect on getting more people buying online instead of going offline into shops. But yeah, let's say, or let's name it, besides the corona effects, the shopping habits changed in general also. As already mentioned, offline is in distress and online wins more and more heavy users. I mean, this is something we see already for the last couple of years. But in Germany, for example, it is a problem in terms of small and traditional businesses, for example. Those are in danger. And I mean, Corona supported it as well, that they're going to be in much more danger in future. So I think the next months will be still very hard for the most companies. And let's see how it's going to be.
Yeah. I mean, aside from COVID-19 and the implications of that, what do you think the biggest challenges that the German affiliate industry is currently facing?
Yeah, as already mentioned, I think especially the law system is bringing a few challenges with it. So changes in the cookie guidelines and hard restrictions for tracking methods had a high impact on corporations' performances and companies in the last months. But I think this was also something related or also something other countries in Europe had problems with, because I think it was in European wide law change in that case. And also social media gets more and more difficult. I mean, to be successful in terms of performance on channels like, for example, Facebook, Instagram, or TikTok in the meanwhile as well, you have to invest a lot of budget. So it's nearly not possible to have an organic growth and to grow like exponential, like compared to if you invest budget into ads, for example. So, but here as well, I think this is not a problem only in Germany. I think this is also something which is a problem in other countries as well. So yeah, to be successful in the meanwhile, in the affiliate industry, you have to invest a lot of budget. Otherwise, it's nearly impossible to be on a long-term base successful.
Yeah, yeah. And in terms of that new growth, are there any new or innovative local publisher models or new business types that you've seen recently in the affiliate channel that you think are particularly interesting?
So the affiliate industry itself is, in my opinion, at an all-time high. So it was never that important to do affiliate marketing and to be within this branch. So for sure, there are constantly new publisher models on the market, which definitely should be considered by all advertisers. So I would always recommend to advertisers to try things, to try new things, and don't be scared about maybe new possibilities you have, you know. And yeah, but overall, the main channels for Germany are like usually the same. It's like already mentioned, cashback, voucher, contents, and in content included is also social media and influencer campaigns, price comparison sites, product search engines, retargeting. So these are like the standard channels or possibilities you have in or you're using in a German affiliate landscape. But for example, where I see a potential and which is getting more and more popular for building online marketing campaigns around it are podcasts, like we're doing it now. So the podcast sector increased by I don't know how much thousands of percents in Germany in the last months and years. So as far as I know, for example, there is one German podcast, it's called Gemischte Sack, and it's one of the most successful podcasts on the world. That's crazy. And there is such a reach behind those podcasts. And due to the fact that podcasts are usually listened by mobile devices, it's also easier to get the users to convert because they are already on their mobile device where they can buy things and convert for the shop. So this is something where I see definitely potential. And yeah, maybe this is going to be the new content trend for 2020 or the next year.
Yeah, I didn't realize that Awin Talks as a podcast is already at the cutting edge, but we're hoping to scale the giddy heights of the likes of the Joe Rogan podcast and others like that that are so popular around the world. So maybe one
day. I mean, B2B podcasts are another thing. I mean, B2C, so podcasts where like the users themselves or the consumers themselves are listening, for sure are much easier, or it's much easier to get in touch or to contact your potential target audience. But yeah, B2B the same. I mean, it's also interesting there. And I think if you're doing it right, and I think so, this is going to be successful as well.
Yeah, let's hope so. Okay, so final question. I've set a challenge for each of these interviews that I've held so far, and that's just to ask our local expert to sum up their affiliate industry in just three words. And I wanted to see how you got on with that. What were your three words, Daniel?
Pooh, difficult. I would say affiliate industry in Germany is relevant. So the first main words would be relevant. In terms of target audience, I would say price sensitive. So in terms of the users, and back to the laws, it's also restrictive.
Yeah. Okay, great. Three very useful words there to characterize the German affiliate industry. So thank you for taking part today, and thanks for sharing all of those insights on the German market, Daniel, and we wish you the best of luck for the future.
Thank you. Same to you back, and thanks for the invitation again.
Great insight into the German digital ad space there, thanks to Daniel. And in fact, if you're interested in learning more about the state of affiliate marketing in Germany right now, then our German team have recently published an excellent localized version of the Ahrens Report 2020, which features in-depth insights and views on its current status. The document is naturally in German, but if you're fluent and keen to take a look, then you can download a copy of the report on the German Ahrens site, and we'll include links to that in the notes to this month's episode. And it was also a really great interview with Rupa there too, which shed a lot of light onto a topic that is an evolving discussion for brands and regulators, not to mention affiliates who operate in various markets across the globe. It's going to be interesting to see how the issue evolves over the next few months and years. And as we mentioned earlier, the forthcoming launch of Ahrens Admission Tool hopefully goes some way to helping our affiliates and brands continue to work together in a manner that is both compliant and transparent. So stay tuned for more details on that very soon. In terms of other content that's been published recently that may be of interest to listeners, our webinar series continued with a special session discussing some of the difficult data points that brands and publishers may be struggling to measure currently, and which introduced four Ahrens tech partners that can help resolve them. Paul Stewart of our strategic partnerships team interviewed a panel of experts whose solutions cover everything from personalization, app tracking, data consolidation, and attribution, and which are all available to use through Ahrens platform right now. A recording of that webinar is free to watch on the Ahrens site currently, and it's well worth checking out if any of these issues are ones that resonate for you. Now, aside from that, what else has caught your eye recently, Kev, in terms of some of the content that's been produced?
So some members of the Ahrens team pulled together 10 lessons that digital marketers can learn from COVID-19, which we've recently published in two parts. There were 10 of these lessons. I just wanted to sort of focus in on a couple of them. The first, which I thought was a really interesting observation, was that we've all kind of become businesses in that we're working from home, and that sort of shift from B2B delivering to kind of huge offices has effectively sort of shifted to individuals at home. And so we're kind of all now, we will now need to be marketed by these B2B companies in terms of kind of home office working and all of the kind of tools and tech that we need to do that properly, which I thought was a really interesting observation. The other one, which we've been really monitoring quite closely, is the sort of surge in affiliates that we've seen joining the network. I think that's partly been spurred by a topic that we've covered in previous podcasts, which is the Amazon decision to sort of slash their commissions. We certainly noticed an immediate surge in the number of publishers signing up to the network, certainly in the US, where I think those cuts were felt the deepest. But generally across the network, I think that affiliate marketing has been raised maybe slightly in awareness. And a really interesting stat that the team pulled out was that we had a 103% increase in new publisher signups from the end of March, when kind of lockdown happened in a lot of places, to the beginning of July. So, you know, there's a whole new opportunity out there for both publishers and also brands to tap into, hopefully some really interesting consumer audiences.
Well, if you want to check out what the other lessons that were learned from COVID-19 in those two articles, then you can go straight to the Ahrens site, where both of them are available to read right now. But that's all we've got time for now. I'm shortly off to take some annual leave and to recharge my batteries with a short domestic and probably quite rainy break to the Cotswolds. But I'll be back in time for next month's episode of Ahrens Talks, and I hope you will be too. I'm talking to you, the listeners, as well as Kev, obviously. In the meantime, though, thanks for listening, and we'll hopefully see you again in September. It's goodbye from me, and goodbye from Kev.
Bye-bye.